Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Want to give a shout out and a big thank you to our friends, Doug Workman, and everybody at Liberty Pure Solutions, taking care of all of our water needs. 800 clean water, but you can find them at Liberty Pure. You can find me. And if you need well water, you need a hot water heater like I needed at my place, you need some plumbing needs. My wife was amateur plumbering over the weekend, too. We had a little water spout in the kitchen. So, well, you know, things happen. Keep them in mind. As all of our sponsors are here. I know we got tough times. We are not going to be at Radio Row next week in Tampa for all things Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes. Luke, I want to bring you in the aftermath of a couple championship games on Sunday. Full disclosure for me, and, you know, do not cry a river for me. You know, as a kid, I dreamed of going to one Super Bowl. I know I've told you this, right? And I found my ticket stub from the first Super Bowl I went to, which was Minneapolis in 92. And this week, we are celebrating the 20th anniversary of Silver Betty and our championship. And I've got Coach Billick coming on this week, and Marvin's checking in, Mike Smith's checking in, half the team's checking in, Saragusa, Redmond, Stokely, Jamal, Flynn, Ogden, just go down the list. They'll all be here this week, all right? But Luke, you know, this was weird sitting around, and like usually, and I know it's been this way for you the last 10 years of your life, much of your adulthood, quite frankly, where we watch these games and then we're going to the Super Bowl. We're going to talk about it all week. A week without Tom Brady. I don't know that I can stand it. I just need to get more people on, but they wouldn't be from New England this week, right?
Yeah, well, I'm thinking about it. My first Super Bowl was 2011 Indianapolis, or you know, early 2012, calendar year-wise. Brady and the Patriots were there then, and then they were there in 2014, 2016, 2017, 2018, and now what would have been the end of the 2020 season. Of course, we're not going to be in Tampa, as you just said, but it's crazy. I saw someone cited the fact that Tom Brady has now been to, what is it, 18% of the Super Bowls? I mean, he's literally been to a fifth of the Super Bowls. If you look in his career, and it's funny, you just mentioned the 20th anniversary of the Ravens' first Super Bowl. That was Tom Brady's rookie year, by the way, when he was still Bledsoe's backup. But he's been to, over the course of his career, you play it out mathematically, every other year he's been in the Super Bowl, roughly. I mean, that's insane. I said it, and I just tweeted this out at Baltimore Luke and at WNST. Tom Brady's first Super Bowl came, get this, I'll give you a little Baltimore context here. 4 months after Cal Ripken played his final game, and between Tom Brady's first Super Bowl and now his upcoming 10th Super Bowl, Ed Reed entered the league, played an entire Hall of Fame career, and was inducted in Canton. I mean, that's how long we're talking that this has gone on. I mean,
I remember when Brady took over. I was syndicated then, and on Monday mornings, Baldinger and I would sit up at Mount Laurel, and the season began with Bledsoe, right? And we had Bledsoe on the show. And Belichick was still sort of doing media then. You know what I mean? Like, he didn't do the show, but it wasn't like this kingdom. The minute Brady took over, Baldinger kept saying, we got to get this kid New England on. We got to get this kid New England on. Little did we know that kid would never do radio, would never call anybody ever. He was sort of like Prince. You know what I mean? Like, he had his own symbol, you know? And here we are all these years later, 20 years later. Dude, it feels like a minute ago. I found all the pictures of, like, Don Shula sitting on our set and Stacey Keebler wearing Get Nasty shirts and running our concierge to bring guests on. Feels like 5 minutes ago, and I'm thinking, we would be sitting in that same convention hall where you've never been, right? You've never been to Super Bowl Tampa.
Have not.
Yeah, man, this is sort of like old hat, you know? This is where I almost killed the guy from Dallas 11, 12 years ago. So, like, I want to go back just because of that. But, yeah, I mean, we're not going to be there, and nobody's going to be there, and Tom Brady's going to be there, and it's a home team Super Bowl, and it's Brady and Mahomes. Dude, it's like sort of pinch me, sort of like, the NFL couldn't figure this out, right? Like, in the middle of a plague, to have the story of all stories and then none of us there to cover it, right? Except them.
Right. I mean, think about this. And we had this to a degree with Peyton Manning a few years back, but it's crazy. As much as the focus this week is going to be on Brady being there without Belichick, I saw Aaron Schatz from Football Outsiders noted this, and it really is remarkable. I've alluded to this, but look at the history of 40-something quarterbacks in the NFL. I mean, it's not just bad. It's woeful. I mean, absolutely dreadful.
There's no one that's ever done it, right? Like Steve DeBerg and like, I'm trying to think of the Blandas. Keep going. Give me some names.
There aren't many. It's and normally when it's been one that's had any kind of team success, it's been a Peyton Manning situation where that Denver defense carried a 39. I think Peyton Manning was 39 in 9 months, 10 months, something like that. He wasn't quite 40, but it's been
Example of that would be, I found the pictures of the dearly departed T-Bone Tony Jones, who went and won a Super Bowl with Elway. That had nothing to do with Elway, right? Elway should have won those Super Bowls back in the 80s. The fact that he won it at the turn of the century, Elway was what, 37, 8, 9? He was there, right?
I mean, But the point, the overall point is when quarterbacks get into their 40s, they don't just decline, they fall off a cliff. And we saw this with Peyton Manning in his age 39 season. For Tom Brady to do this, and look, let's be very clear, Tom Brady knew exactly what he was doing going to Tampa Bay. They had a good defense last year that played really well down the stretch. And you could see that they had skill position player talent, but Jameis Winston threw, 30 interceptions? I mean, the quarterback was absolutely the missing piece, stating the obvious. So he saw a team that absolutely had talent. It's not as though Tom Brady went to a dog and just willed them to make the playoffs and to now win these games on the road, and he's back in the Super Bowl in Tampa. But for him to do this without Belichick, fine. And that's going to be talked about a lot, and I get it. And I'll be the first to say, Nestor, before the season started, I thought the Patriots would do better without Tom Brady than Tom Brady would do without the Patriots at this stage of his career, because he's 43 years old. Again, the history of the league. This is – I don't even know what the equivalent would probably be, what Barry Bonds did on – well, you know, the things that he was on playing into his 40s at the level at which he played. So that's how extraordinary this is for Brady to be doing this. And look, he's not the guy he was 5 years ago or 10 years ago, but he's still playing at a high level. And you saw that at least in the first half on Sunday. Now, second half, you know, throwing three picks, not so much, but that speaks to how good of a job that Tampa Bay front did at really harassing Aaron Rodgers. But it really is remarkable what we're seeing. And I've said this to you five different times at this point, where we've been talking about a Brady-led team going to the Super Bowl. But for him to start over and to do this in a pandemic year, as you mentioned, I mean, the NFL couldn't have written up the script any better if you're looking for old guard versus best new young quarterback in the game.
Well, let's start with this. But, you know, they did the draft virtually with hot cocoa. We were wondering whether there would be a season, if there would be a season. Now there's only one game left in the season. And if at the beginning you would have written a script for the season to turn out this way, I mean, the fact that they made it through, even the drama, the hiccups of the Ravens and the Titans and sure. COVID and you know, whatever else that went on during the course of the season, the fact that Tom Brady is having a home, the only thing he had, I said to my wife Sunday, the only thing he never did was win the NFC Championship game in Green Bay. And, right. You know, the only thing he never really did in New England was win a home Super Bowl, because they never played one. You know, the only thing he didn't do in his career was win in the NFC in the other conference. The only thing he ever did was win without Bill Belichick. Like, all of the boxes are getting checked off. And I see Vegas. To me, this is a 7-point game. I think the Chiefs are going to win. And until Tom Brady goes out and does the impossible again, and I'll eat it, fine. But, like, I don't think the Buccaneers are going to win, and I'm going to be pretty brazen about that. I think the Chiefs are going to win.
And look, I would pick the Chiefs as well, but this goes back to the point I was just making, though. This isn't just Tom Brady. You know, this isn't a 30-year-old Tom Brady that came to a, you know, went to the, I don't know, the Miami Dolphins or the Cleveland Browns or, you know, the Detroit Lions, and suddenly turned a bad team into a great team. That's a team that absolutely has some talent. I do think Eric Fisher tearing his Achilles in the second half of that Kansas City win over Buffalo is big when you consider what that Tampa Bay pass rush did against the Green Bay offensive line that was banged up. Of course, they lost Bakhtiari, their left tackle, several weeks back, and that was something that they had some issues. They had some issues with right tackle, Rick Wagner, I guess, playing there. You know, they had some issues with that Tampa pass
rush.
When
did he get there, by the way? I digress, yes.
Yeah, it's the NFL. Guys move around. But
I looked up, I'm like, what's he doing there? Yeah.
But if you're looking for the formula, and you and I will have a chance to talk about the game, so we won't belabor it too much because there's the AFC side to talk about. But if there's a formula for this, for Tampa Bay to have a chance, it's much like what we saw with San Francisco against Kansas City last year in the Super Bowl. They got to Mahomes. You know, they had a four-man front. We know, and we've known this by watching the Ravens the last couple of years against Kansas City. Patrick Mahomes kills the blitz. So you better get there with four. I mean, that's just reality because you need guys, seven guys in coverage. So, but with losing Fisher, your left tackle, that's certainly a formula there for Tampa Bay to have a little more of a chance. But I mean, you saw the Kansas City team that I saw on Sunday night. And for as much as we talked at various points over the last couple months of Kansas City getting bored, right? I mean, they would jump out to these leads early in games and then they just cruise. And by the end of the game, it was a one score game. And anyone who didn't watch it would say, oh, the Chiefs are kind of just scooting by, but they were bored because you saw what they did on Sunday against the Buffalo defense that held the Ravens to 3 points. And I know the Ravens offense isn't the Chiefs offense, but it's still darn good offense, you know, in a different way. So you saw what Buffalo did to the Ravens, but they couldn't stop Kansas City. And Sean McDermott played a way too conservative style of play to have any chance. You know, he played a style of game that leads to a 2-touchdown loss to Kansas City, even if you play okay. So, you know, but I think, you know, going back to what you said, I mean, Kansas City has to be favored. It is Tom Brady. It is a Tampa team that has some impressive victories on their resume this year. So they're not a fluke. They're not someone that, you know, anyone should be shocked that they're there. At least based on, you know, going into the start of the playoffs, maybe you were not convinced that 43-year-old Tom Brady was going to be very good this year in general. But, you know, that's a team that, for as much as they had some dog performances at a few different points in the regular season, for the most part, they were a really good team in the NFC. And
but look, you know, at that cast of characters he's put together there. You know, Ndamukong Suh, you know what I mean? Antonio Brown, Rob Gronkowski, right? Like, it's like the island of, you know, misfit toys of yesterday's Pro Bowls, of, you know, rich guys who some have won, some haven't won, right? You know, now they're 60 minutes away, and Arians. I love Bruce Arians. Always love Bruce. But so they're. I almost sort of root for Tom Brady in that helmet, sort of weird way. It makes me feel all like dirty, man. It's weird, and it's because of Jensen. Because Jensen's my boy, you know. But yeah, it's. I guess I'll be rooting for them. I have no dog in the hunt with the Chiefs. I don't know anybody in the Chiefs or Andy Reid this much. But yeah, as far as ex Ravens and stuff like that, and. But, man, it's hard to like Tom Brady in any uniform. It really is.
I hear you. It really is one of those games where are you really going to root for Tom Brady to win another Super Bowl? So number 7 for him, this is his 10th overall Super Bowl. Or Kansas City becomes the first team since the 2003-04 Patriots to win back-to-back Super Bowls. So you kind of have those two from a Baltimore perspective as far as thinking about old rivalries and you know, what the Ravens want to become a rivalry with Kansas City. You got to beat the Chiefs until it really becomes one. But, you know, to go back to what you said, I mean, Tampa Bay, they have Lavonte David on defense. They have Devin White, really another young, talented linebacker from LSU in the same way that the Ravens have Patrick Queen. So they have some good players, and especially, you know, on that defense. I think it's obvious to look at the offensive talent. You know, when you see even a guy like a Scotty Miller catch a touchdown right before halftime, which how Green Bay gives that up is just unforgivable. You know, as much as we'll point to, you know, what happened at the end of the game and kicking the field goal, you give up essentially a Hail Mary right at halftime. You know, when you're in, what was it, single high safety coverage. I mean, how does that happen? So it's very, very strange to see that. But you know, this is a Tampa team. As I said, Tom Brady knew exactly what he was doing going there. If he was going to start over, he was going to go to a place that had, you know, that the cupboard wasn't bare. we talked a lot last year about the lack of skill player talent that New England had. It was Edelman and, you know, James White, and that was about it at that point. I mean, there just wasn't a whole lot left there around Brady. So if he was going to leave there and start over at age 43, he was going to go somewhere where there was a Mike Evans and there was a Chris Godwin. And, you know, He was obviously a big part in bringing in Antonio Brown, who didn't play on Sunday, but, you know, again, a talented player, regardless of what you think about him as a person. So, you know, there was a lot of talent there. And Tom Brady comes in and plays at a high level. Wasn't the best in the league this year, but he played well, and he played really well down the stretch. So, you know, it is remarkable to see. And again, someone at age 43 to be doing that, because it's Tom Brady, and because so many people are sick of him, and I believe me, I get that sentiment completely, but we don't fully grasp how insane it is what he's doing right now at his age. I mean, that's really the remarkable accomplishment here. But again, naturally, and I totally understand it, people are going to focus on the divorce with Belichick and the Patriots and him being here. But at age 43, I mean, it really is extraordinary what we're seeing, regardless of how you feel about Tom Brady personally.
Dude, I'm on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers website trying to figure out like who their coaches were and stuff, and whether I know like who else might be there that I know besides Ryan Jensen and Rick Wagner. And I forgot about Zadarius too, like with the Packers and Mike Pettine. And I was just trying to like find people that had some roots here. How about this dude, Mike Caldwell? Does that name? I had to look at him and say, is that the same Mike Caldwell? The Mike Caldwell who was drafted, who led to the Ray Lewis draft pick and all the stuff that happened with the Browns in 95, 96 when they moved here. Mike Caldwell came off the boat. An original 96 Raven, as much as we talked about, you know, losing T-Bone this week. We talked about losing Greg Montgomery a couple months ago. And I'm going to have some Ravens history on here this week to honor Super Bowl 35. But Mike Caldwell's their inside linebackers coach. Who knew? Who knew, huh? What happened? I haven't heard his name in 25 years.
I want to say, didn't Mike Caldwell have a pick six against Jacksonville in 96? I was at the reason why I would remember that is I was sitting lower level, closed end zone. I mean, just absolutely awful seats, you know, for a football game. I mean, great if it were the Orioles playing several years before that. But I want to say Mike Caldwell had a pick six in that game, or maybe it was a fumble recovery or something like that. But yeah, pretty. It is crazy when you kind of see some of those names.
Where were your seats in Memorial Stadium? That's all I'm interested in, because I've been looking at old Memorial Stadium pictures. Where were these?
They were literally behind the old home plate. So, you know, in
down
the
low,
enclosed, you know.
That's where my dad and I, our season tickets were there. Our season tickets were my dad and I sat in section one.
Yeah. I mean, it was just tickets that my dad and I had gotten, single game tickets. They weren't season tickets of anyone we knew or anything like that. It was just one of the games I got to go to. I actually got Johnny Unitas' autograph before that game.
You my still dad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, nice. Absolutely. I was 13 years old, and it probably speaks to the world that 1996 is, but my dad trusted me he dropped me off near the stadium. I had my ticket. I knew my way around Memorial Stadium. I mean, I'd been there, you know, probably at least dozens and dozens of times.
Your dad was an usher there. You knew every nook and cranny.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But he dropped me off because he hated to pay for parking. So he parked a little bit further away, you know, just a side street somewhere, you know, 5, 6, 7 blocks away, whatever it was. I can't remember, but I sat there. I was in there way early. I mean, it was probably an hour before kickoff. And Johnny U, as he was prone to do in those days, was standing behind the one end zone during pregame and a safe management security guard.
Mr. Unitas.
And I didn't even get to talk to him. It was actually a security guard. I was 13. I'm like, hey, Johnny U is my dad's all-time favorite player. I know
who
he is.
How can I not ever heard this story? You've never told this story on the radio.
I mean, it's not as I didn't get like a meet and greet or anything. The security guard took my ticket stub and Unitas signed it. So, and what was funny?
What game was that? Jacksonville.
It was Jacksonville, right? Yeah,
96 Jacksonville.
One of the many games where the Ravens had a chance to win that year, you know, that game.
97, though, we like kicked off the year against them, I think, and lost.
I was at that game. I was
so
at
this
that
was the 96
well.
Game. Okay, fair enough.
You're thinking, 97, that was the Rob Johnson game.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, Brunel was out. But yeah, I got Johnny U's autograph, and what was funny was I was thinking, you know, in my 13-year-old mind, I'm thinking, wow, I'm going to give this to Dad on Christmas. He's not going to have any idea. This is going to be the biggest surprise. I couldn't wait. I told him immediately, hey, look at this. And I showed him, and you know, his eyes lit up. And so, yeah, I mean, that's the coolest random autograph that I got. Not something that I purchased or, you know, because I'm a little bit of a memorabilia guy here and there. But, yeah, so that's my 1996 story. And I'm pretty sure Mike Caldwell had either an interception or a fumble or something like that return either for a touchdown or it set up an easy touchdown. I know he made a play in that game.
So I've been putting like old pictures and ticket stubs and stuff up. You know, I have vats of this stuff, right? Because I have everything I've ever had. And the death of Hank Aaron led me over the weekend into a rabbit hole. Like, because, you know, I met Hank Aaron one time. And it was with Ozzie Newsome, who was friends with Hank Aaron. I was getting in the elevator at the old Georgia Dome. And you had to enter in the back of the old Georgia Dome down this long escalator. It's like it was built into, you know, into the center of the earth. It's built under the ground. So I get in this elevator. I look and I saw Ozzie with someone and it was out of place, right? It's a football game. It's 11 in the morning on a Sunday. Mm-hmm. I had fans with me at the time. This is before I was married. This is back in the 90s. We played a game down there. It was the Stoney Case game, right? It was the Stoney Case game. It was the game where John Ogden right. got stretchered. It was terrible, yep. right? 99. That's the day I met Hank Aaron. And I'm in the lobby of the Georgia Dome. And I saw a guy, an African-American older man. And I looked at him and like, the first thing that maybe came to my mind, like I didn't know who, I knew it was somebody famous, but it was so out of context. And I'm like, it just took me like 5, 4, 3. I'm like, that's Hank Aaron. You know, it just took me a minute. And mm-hmm. then I realized he and Ozzie were like together. And I was like, that's Ozzie, because I knew Ozzie, right? And we were getting on an elevator and I was like, get in the elevator with it. You know, so I rode the elevator with Hank Aaron up. And I didn't say anything. I didn't have a camera. I would just, Mr. Aaron, you know, like that. But I distinctly remember it being one of the first memories of my childhood. Now, I do remember the 73 baseball playoffs. And I do remember the 73 football season. So I have football and baseball memories. But the memory of Hank Aaron hitting the home run, enormous for me. I mean, I remember Al Downing, my mom and I, like, I remember where I was sitting on the couch. I was 5 years old. But the thing that I had forgotten about, and this is what happens when you get to be my age, Luke, is that I saw Hank Aaron play. I started to see people say, did you see Hank Aaron play or whatever? In 1976, I'll never forget this, my dad had never seen Hank Aaron play, okay? So my dad wanted to see Hank Aaron play. And my dad, we were very casual about Oriole games, I can't stress that enough that in my household, my dad was sort of like, we could go to an Oriole game anytime I asked or anytime he wanted to go or anytime there was a good pitching matchup that he wanted to see Nolan Ryan or Frank Tanana or, you know, Paul Splitorf or whoever he liked, right? Or if he had a crush on Flanagan or McGregor that year, he would want to go see them pitch. And a lot of it was weather. My dad didn't like going on rainy nights. So if it's going to rain, we don't go. Sure. That's a pain in the ass. Even if Ryan's pitching, we just, we'll listen to the game on the radio tonight. We'll get some crabs or we'll do something else. Go to Alona's and get some pizza or something. So in 76, I turned to my wife and I'm like, Jen, I saw Hank Aaron play. And it was in daylight, but it was a twilight. And it was the first game of a doubleheader. And I was behind home plate. It was probably section 38 or 39 upper because I remember being up there and I remember Hank Aaron hit a single. And she's like, dude, you're like Mary Lou Henner, you know, like totally, you know, like Rain Man. And I looked it up and I'm like, it was either 75 or 76, but I sort of thought it was 76. And I looked it up, and sure enough, July 24th, 1976, the Orioles played the Brewers in a four-game series. There was a twilight doubleheader on a Friday night, and in game one, Hank Aaron singled off Mike Cuellar, went 1-for-2, and was pinch hit for. And the reason my dad took me that night, and this will tell you the, because you're a nerd about baseball, my dad said to me, look, we're going to see Hank Aaron play. If we go and there's a doubleheader, he's going to play one of the two games, and we'll get to see him play. We go on Thursday, he might play, might not play. He's only pinch hit. They got this Gorman Thomas guy coming up now, you know? So, and that's probably the night I fell in love with Sixto Lescano, because I think he played both games of the doubleheader. I should look and see if he had a home run in game one or game. He might have hit a home run that night, and I fell in love with him because I was 7 years old. So I saw Hank Aaron play because my dad wanted to see Hank Aaron play. And, you know, then I think about like seeing Tom Brady play or seeing Joe Montana play, which I did, or seeing Johnny U play, which I didn't, right? The first game I ever went to see, I saw Joe Namath play and I saw Stan White separate his shoulder and Stan's never let me forget it all these years later. But you think about the incredible memories you have or whether you saw Ray Lewis play or what. But when Hank Aaron dies, right, this happens where you start to think about like, wow, did I see Michael Jordan play? Did I see Gretzky play? Did I ever see LeBron play? You know, like all of those kind of things. Hank Aaron is, you know, there's a different level. No disrespect to Frank Robinson. No disrespect to Brooks Robinson or even Jim Palmer, who's the greatest Oriole of all time. Hank Aaron's like a different level. And I had completely forgotten about him being alive, or I hadn't seen him in a while. I think I saw a thing on TV. But I didn't think it was possible he would die, right? So, like, it all sort of came flooding back. And now I'm looking for the ticket stub for that, because I think I have it from that Brewers game. But what I did find was I found, you mentioned your autograph for Johnny U. My dad, when I was a little boy with the Colts in 77 or 78, you'd have to look it up. We played the Browns, probably 77, because the stadium was more full. And 78, things went off a cliff right around Troop and Kirkland. But the stadium was full. We always got there early. By the way, I found hot chocolate that I spilled on my program from the Steelers Kroner game. I found my Kroner program and I looked down and I'm like, the Jen, that's my hot chocolate that my mom made for me. But my dad made me run down and get a Lenny Moore autograph. So you have a Johnny U story. I did the exact same thing with Lenny Moore. I didn't even know who Lenny Moore was. My dad just pointed. He said, that's Lenny Moore. Go get his autograph. And I ran down to the thing and Lenny signed a ticket for me. I have a Cleveland Browns ticket stub signed by Lenny Moore. So there. There's my Johnny U story. Man, being a kid, there's nothing better, right? Like, when this happens, and I feel for the kids that can latch on and see a Mahomes-Brady Super Bowl, and I'd say this, getting it back to the game, it's full circle. Mahomes is only going to get one chance to beat Brady in a Super Bowl.
We think, right? Although we keep saying this about Tom Brady, he keeps going. I mean, it's incredible.
He said 45, really, so he will play again, right? This will not be his last
game. He's already said he wants to continue playing. I mean, at some point in time, it's going to be over. I mean, we know that, but
he had a pretty good time with his kid after the game, right? That was kind of cool. That was legitimate. And that's what,
I'm glad you brought up Hank Aaron, because, I mean, again, you consider the baseball royalty we've lost over the last 12 to 13 months. I mean, Al Kaline in that group, of course, Baltimore, native Baltimorean. But you have your different tiers of the Hall of Fame. And we, you know, we use the term the GOAT so often now. You know, we use the term one of the all-time greats very liberally compared to how we actually should, if we're really being honest with ourselves. And not just in baseball, but all these sports. But, you know, Hank Aaron was the elite of the elite. You know, you talked about until this past, you know, these past few days, it was him and Willie Mays as the greatest living Hall of Famers. And, you know, with no disrespect to anyone else, as you mentioned, and, you know, guys like Frank Robinson, who we've lost over the last couple of years, who rank very highly on the all-time greats list. I mean, what Hank Aaron did, think about it. If you take away his home runs, he still had over 3,000 hits. If he didn't hit a single home run, right now you just decided you were going to wipe away his home runs. He still had over 3,000 hits. I mean, it's extraordinary. But, you know, to bring it back to the game, what you just mentioned, it's where, and this is something that I feel like I gained an appreciation for this watching Tom, or watching Peyton Manning at the end of his career, that last year in Denver, where, remember, he gets benched and, I mean, he just looks awful. But he found a way to play just barely well enough to not mess it up for that Denver defense that was terrific. And, you know, so many people said, oh, you know, Manning's embarrassing himself and why is he doing this? And
it was Billy Kilmer. He couldn't throw the ball, man.
But to me, there's something charming about seeing someone who is a diminished version of themselves when they're an all-time great. And, you know, this still doesn't even really apply to Tom Brady, because he's still playing at a really high level. He's not the best anymore, but he was still up well above average this year. But when you see some of these guys who've been around forever, and you have your local allegiance, and look, I understand Ravens fans not liking Tom Brady and hating the Patriots. I get all of that. I'm not disparaging that whatsoever. But to the point you just made about Hank Aaron, it really is one of those situations where these are the good old days when you're talking about a Tom Brady, when you're talking about a Peyton Manning, when you're talking about, you know, Philip Rivers to a lesser degree, but just that era of quarterbacks. And, you know, in the same way that we talk about all-time greats now who are, you know, baseball guys in their 80s passing on and losing Hall of Famers, don't let, you know, don't be clouded too much by disdain for Tom Brady and the Patriots to the point where you don't appreciate a little bit how extraordinary this really is, because I mean, it's just, it's so rare. And, you know, I don't really have a rooting interest. I hope it's a really good game. But you consider what Patrick Mahomes has become over the last couple of years. He's the consensus best player in the NFL now. I think you'd ask anyone, yeah, Aaron Rodgers is going to win the MVP this year. But you ask anyone, the one player they want if they're starting an NFL franchise right now in 2021, it's Patrick Mahomes. I mean, I don't know what other answer would even be all that convincing at this point. But consider what he would have to do from this point. Let's say he wins in a couple weeks and he's won back-to-back Super Bowls. Well, he only has four more Super Bowls to go to win and eight more to make to then match Tom Brady. I mean, that...
He's got to make eight more and win half of them.
Yeah, I mean, that's... and that's if he wins. That's if he wins this one and has two under his belt then. I mean, that's... That sounds like a video game. You know, that sounds like a franchise mode on Madden football. On
it sounds like it's not going to be a whole lot of fun for the Ravens or the Raiders or the Chargers or, you know, anybody else either, if that's the way it's going to go down. And certainly for us and for Lamar Jackson to sit here and watch this, you have to say at some point you're going to have to go beat that kid in the same way we said that for 20 years about Brady, right?
Yeah. I mean, no question about it. I mean, it's... And look, that's not to say that the the Chiefs are going to become the new Patriots. That, again, something that's very, very rare. I mean, this is what the Patriots did over the last two decades, you know, with Brady. And of course, now he's doing it somewhere else for a short period of time. Yeah, that's thinking about the Yankees in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s. I mean, you know, that's how insane that is. So it really is remarkable. But yeah. You know, Lamar Jackson and the Ravens and Josh Allen and the Bills found this out on Sunday evening. And, you know, although it's going to be interesting seeing some of this potential veteran quarterback movement, whether it's Deshaun Watson or Matthew Stafford. Aaron Rodgers was very cryptic with his post-game message on Sunday. I mean, maybe we're going to see some a shakeup that's a little more NBA-like with some of these quarterbacks, established quarterbacks changing teams. But, you know, for what it is, for what this Super Bowl is, and I get it. There was Brady fatigue a decade ago, but for that, and then for him to go up against Patrick Mahomes, who, you know, is the best player in today's game, you know, that's pretty special to kind of get that. And to your point, we assume this will be the last time that, you know, we see Brady go up against Mahomes in a setting like this, but who the heck knows? At this point, I'm not. You know, I might be picking the Chiefs, but that's more of a bet on Patrick Mahomes than a bet against Tom Brady at this point. And, you know, there have been plenty of times I've picked against the Patriots in the Super Bowl and got my feelings hurt. So I'm certainly not going to say Tampa Bay can't win.
Well, we will not be getting out of bed at 5 a.m. next week in beautiful 72-degree Tampa and walking 12 blocks from the courtyard, you know, down through the middle and the palm trees and getting some Rofo and a little cup and going in and talking to Hall of Famers. I will definitely miss that, right? I mean, this is 27 years I've gone to Super Bowls. I'm going to share some old pictures and share some old audio and video and some memories, especially from 20 years ago. So all week long, if you are tuning in, you're going to be hearing from members of the Super Bowl 35 troop, including our partner, Coach Brian Billick, on behalf of Living Classrooms Foundation. But Marvin's going to be here, Mike Smith, and memories of Super Bowl 35. You know, Luke, Thursday's the official anniversary, the 28th. I know I've asked you this before at different points in all of our lives, 20 years ago, right? Like, I remember so much about it, and all these pictures bring back things about Whiskey Joe's and the girl I was dating then and the people in my life then and the things that were important to me then and how the radio station was operating, like all of these things that come to you. But the hardest part is that it's been 20 years. You know, that's really the weird part of it.
To try to put that into words for someone who's younger, you know, someone who's in their 20s right now, you know, someone in their early 20s who might have been alive for it.
Right,
you know, yeah. For me, and I say this, I was a high school senior when the Ravens won the Super Bowl. Of course, it was their fifth year back.
How old were you when they moved here?
When the Ravens, it was 1996. I turned 13 in October of 1996. So, you know, I was...
So you were 12 years old when the team moved here.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
But I to put it into words for someone who's a little bit younger and doesn't remember it or wasn't even born. I mean, that's the thing. We could have, you know, a 16-year-old right now could be listening to us and they weren't even born yet. That's how crazy it is that it's been 20 years, but it's something that it didn't feel possible that it could happen. I mean, it really didn't. So much of my childhood was thinking about Baltimore getting a team, let alone thinking about the possibility of that team being so good that it could win a Super Bowl. And even the Ravens in their fifth year, 1999, they finished strong and they were 8-8, but you know, there was no other than I remember, I think it was Sterling Sharp on ESPN had picked the Ravens to win the Super Bowl at the beginning of that year. And what Phil Mickelson, I guess, famously put down a bet on the Ravens that year, but there was no serious, you know, there was a thought the Ravens could make the playoffs with the defense that they had in 99. And, you know, despite all of Ray Lewis's off the field trouble, you know, there was an expectation that the Ravens were going to be pretty good. I think there was an expectation that they could make the playoffs, but you know, no one was thinking Tony Banks at the time was going to take them to the Super Bowl or Trent Dilfer was going to take them to the Super Bowl. So to watch that game, and I don't have any, you know, I didn't go to the Super Bowl 35 or, you know, I did go to the parade a couple days later in the pouring down rain, but it just felt impossible. So to watch that, to watch that unfold, to see the plays in each game, you know, Shannon Sharp catching the deflection against Denver and Anthony Mitchell returning the field goal in Nashville and then the 96-yard touchdown to Shannon Sharp in the AFC Championship. You know, each of those plays where you kind of sat back in your chair after it happened and say, this feels like destiny. This feels like it's meant to be. There was still a sense of this can't really be happening, right? You know, because it for so long, it was just such a mental struggle to think that of Baltimore even getting a team. And think about the Buccaneers and the Bengals and the Cardinals and you know, all the teams and owners that use Baltimore, flirted a little bit to get a better stadium deal in their own market. But for that night, you know, to think about what that was and to think about not just winning a Super Bowl, but dominating, you know, blowing out the Giants in the process and how much the rest of the league and the rest of the football world did not like the Ravens because of Ray Lewis, because of what Brian Billick had done at Media Week to kind of take the heat off Ray Lewis and put it on himself. But what that meant for Baltimore, it's very difficult to describe that feeling because it's something that felt like it couldn't possibly happen. And it did on that night 20 years ago. It's pretty remarkable.
Speaking of that, the death of Larry King. Larry King called my book a good read. Purple Rain,
yeah,
the first one.
I saw that. That's really cool.
I totally forgot about that, right? I mean, you didn't even know about it, right? So the first chapter of Purple Rain is literally what you just said. How it didn't feel possible, you know, like by the way, and as you were saying that, I'm like, I found all these old pictures. Here's a great old picture. I know you'll appreciate this. You like that?
That's great.
Is that great?
Yeah.
That's my museum for you, baby. You like that museum?
So yes. Build the museum.
How about you and I having dinner last year in Miami on the corner?
And Paul Tagliabue was
2 feet away.
Go figure. Happier times, right?
But by the way, you know, you rambled on about all these Super Bowl memories and stuff. And all I thought about was walking out with being on the cell phone and having my mom crying and saying, they're naked girls on TV walking up down Pratt Street. this is like as I'm going out to get the shuttle in Tampa. And I found all the pictures. I put a picture of me, Buddy, Rex, and Rob Ryan up over the weekend at all of our social.
For the Ravens, yeah.
And Rob was the one wearing Raven stuff, and he wasn't a Ravens coach then. I think he was at Oklahoma at the time or about to go to the Patriots I don't know. But so, you know, those memories that I have, but for you to mention the Phil Mickelson bet, I had to Google that. Phil Mickelson formed a betting syndicate. The wager was 22-1. And he bet $20,000, and it paid $560,000. So of all weird things about Super Bowl 35, here's one thing I remember, like literally, Aerosmith, Justin Timberlake, Britney Spears, Ray Charles, and all I was subjected to yesterday was that horrible song trying to sell soda to somebody. I don't know what they're doing. I cannot believe how devalued, nothing has been devalued more during the Trump era than halftime at Super Bowls. That's all I'm going to say.
I don't know. It's been devalued long before the Trump era, but
don't pick on a black guy. They were better than you thought they were. Come on.
There have been plenty of forgettable acts over the last 10 to 15 years, but been some good ones mixed in.
Let me give you Tampa. You ready for Tampa? Okay. Whitney Houston, right? Aerosmith and Justin Timberlake, Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band. And now this, whatever this is.
Yeah.
So I'm, you know, what I'm going to do is I'm going to put together, I said to Jen, I might watch the Puppy Bowl at halftime. I'm looking for like Howard Stern to put some strippers on. I'm looking for something else to do at halftime for 15 minutes.
You're already talking about the 20th anniversary. Just pull up the Super Bowl 35 halftime show on YouTube and play it during halftime. I'm sure it's there.
Oh, beautiful. Oh, spacious sky.
You mentioned Whitney Houston. It's funny. Over the weekend, NFL Network played it was actually the ESPN 30 for 30 they did on the Buffalo Bills, four straight losing four straight Super Bowls, which was a really good special. I watched that over the weekend.
Mike Rossigliano wouldn't like it at all, especially not today. It would be a bad day for Bills fans to watch
that. I mean, I was rooting for Buffalo big time. I mean, how could you not with the way their fans donated to Lamar Jackson, you know, one of Lamar Jackson's favorite charities and, you know, everything there.
And I found my Jim Kelly picture of him wearing an Oriole, ornithologically correct Oriole hat, by the way, just so you go.
There you go. But that Super Bowl 25 with Whitney, you know, they mentioned Whitney's rendition of the anthem, which it's funny because I played youth football shortly thereafter. I mean, the next couple years after that, and they always played the recording of the Whitney Houston national anthem.
Ah.
So, I mean, that's when I hear her sing that, I think of my SYC youth football days.
Nice.
But you know, it really does bring back those memories. And, you know, to your point, I can't say I'm exactly all that hot and bothered and excited about this year's halftime show, but
best national anthem I ever heard in person. And I've been at every Super Bowl. The Lady Gaga in San Francisco a couple of years ago, Julio and I were running around before the game and we ran into her and we said hello to her and she was super pleasant. Like, no security, no, she was just hanging out literally, and like talked to her for a minute. And I'm not a Lady Gaga fan. Like, I'm not a fan. You know what I mean? Like, the song when the movie was hot then, and I like that's a beautiful song. But I'm not like, I don't own Lady Gaga. She's not on my iPod. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, it's not my thing. And I will, dude, the hair on the back of my neck is still standing up from that one. And then they selected her last week for the Biden thing. Mm-hmm. And I cried 10 times last Wednesday. But that one was like, wow, because like to me, that's a great national. No one should sing the national anthem but Lady Gaga for me.
She's extraordinarily talented. I mean, it's to your point. I mean, I probably couldn't name five of her songs.
Let her do halftime. What the hell are these people doing with this?
But
soda pop song. He said that about Michael Jackson 30 years ago too.
You gotta have something, you know, something pop related.
Yeah, Michael Jackson doing sliding in on a rope with a glove at a Super Bowl? It's outrageous in the Rose Bowl. Get off my lawn. Luke Jones will be getting you off his lawn. We will not be I am going to miss getting together with you in Tampa. I mean, it's kind of like a rite of passage.
Sure.
We were going to go to Burns Steakhouse, you know. I was going to make Ryan Jensen pay for it. Now he's playing in the game. So I'm going to chase him around and try to get him in on a Zoom, find out what it's like to swamp ass Tom Brady. So I'll ask him some of these questions.
All about the towel folding for that.
I will ask him etiquette. I will invite you into the conversation. I hope you are on some of these. We're going to do some football next week. We're going to do some Purple Rain memories this week. Mayor Brandon Scott joined us this week. Senate President Bill Ferguson. We're still in the middle of a plague and a pandemic, and we have restaurants open. Please support local people who are supporting us. It's important. I am Nestor. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We got plenty of Super Bowl talk. For better or worse, even though some of them are Super Bowl 35 members here, we are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore. Positive.